Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 14th day of November, Anno Domini 2020. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Shockingly, the first item in the news is not Patch Tuesday. Although, of course, there were patches on patches on patches on patches on patches, but that's a little boring. Let's talk about the fun thing this week. This week, Apple had a big announcement. They're manufacturing their own chips that will go into all their products. Well, it wasn't that big an announcement. I mean, we've known about it for quite a while now. Apple did a much poorer job of hiding their intentions than Google did with their new homemade chips. The new M1 chip is pretty cool. It's an 8-core, 5-nanometer processor that will provide magnitudes faster performance than older chips. The M1 also touts better power efficiency with higher performance during usage with 3 times the performance per watt. It will also be able to run iPhone and iPad apps on the Mac for the first time, including HBO Max. It's Apple's first desktop system on a chip and should provide more power per watt for longer battery life on laptops. Mac OS Big Sur will be optimized for it. Like the Chromebook with Android apps, Big Sur will be able to run iPhone apps natively. However, if you rush out to sell your children and buy a new Mac, be aware that not every application is going to be M1 compatible on day one. Apple users have seen this before during the switch from Motorola to Intel. And somebody pointed out that it was really Motorola to PowerPC, but I've always thought of PowerPC as a Motorola chip, although it was
6 to 8 thousand to PowerPC.
Right. 6 to 8 thousand to PowerPC.
And I'm PowerPC to Intel, and now Intel to Apple.
Intel to Apple, yeah.
Yeah.
But during the switch from PowerPC to Intel, there were a lot of pain points for a while before everything settled down. Expect that again, both with Mac programs and iOS apps. Oh, the golden programs, like all of Apple's own software, as well as the biggies like Microsoft Office, will run. Lightroom should be ready next month, and Photoshop sometime next year. The old versions should still run, but it won't, I think, be exciting. That's true for every old program. If there's not a free upgrade from Intel to the M1 version, expect to shell out more money. The first Apple Silicon Macs include the $1,000 MacBook Air, the 13-inch MacBook Pro starting at $1,300, and the Mac Mini at $700. An Intel version of the 13-inch MacBook Pro remains available. Within the next 2 years, we should see an Apple Silicon iMac and Mac Pro. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple's new M1 chip. And your choices are, I can't wait. I can wait. Eh. Apple. And other. So far, there are 22 votes in the poll. Number one item is Apple. And of course, if you said other, we want you to head over to our website at soundbites.org. Again, that's Bites with a Y. And scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 14Nov20, Apple's new M1 chip. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Or text us. I suddenly hit puberty. Text us at 585-205-8887.
And in a related issue, Big Sur, Apple's next OS, OS 11, they finally went to 11. was released for previous Macs. Do not install it.
Yeah.
Before you check your third-party applications. We have already taken 3 machines in this week. I think it came out on Thursday. We've taken 3 machines in this week to downgrade back to Catalina. If you have automatic updates turned on, that's okay, but this is as an upgrade sneaks in, and so you think it's just an update, but it is a major upgrade. We've already heard that Quark Express does not work on Big Sur, and unfortunately, one of our first responses is, "You're still using Quark Express?"
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some Quark diehards out there. InDesign hasn't completely captured
the world. Just like anything else. Yeah. Folks get their favorite applications, and you know, it works for them. They know it, and they don't want to go learning.
Also, they paid for it, and they don't want to pay for something else.
Yep.
I get it.
Yeah.
So before you upgrade the OS, check your third-party applications. Make sure that they are compatible. And in fact, well, we used to say wait for the 0.1 patch. Well, that came out already. So,
well,
so
they don't, it's good they don't wait.
Yeah, so maybe wait for the 0.2 patch.
Yeah,
now.
wait a minute. It just came out, and the patch beat the how do they do that? Yeah, how do you get a patch out before the actual product?
Well, the 0.0 was probably the initial release, and then the 0.1 is on the new machines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. At any rate, the big thing here to remember is that there will be pain. There's pain moving from any operating system, any processor to a new processor, any operating system to a new operating system, version to version. We tend to forget the pain that came from moving from Windows 7 to Windows 10. We tend to forget the pain that came from moving from Motorola to Intel. We tend to forget that there was pain there. And there was a lot of it. I remember weeks, if not months, of phone calls. How come suddenly this doesn't work? Well, you put it on a machine where it doesn't work.
Well, just the latest update to Windows 10.
Right.
That tried to uninstall or say that, you know, because I like using the classic menu.
Yep.
That program, because it keeps it as window looking like Windows 7.
Right.
Well, the newest update to Windows 10, one, they wanted to put in that stupid Edge.
Oh, yeah, you can't avoid that.
Now Edge is Chromium, so it's okay.
But it wanted to pin itself to my taskbar. I said, nope, get that the heck out of there. And then I had to reinstall the classic menu because it was said, oh, no, this could be harmful. I go, yeah, no, it's not. I don't want to put up with your stupid crud.
Yep. But we do forget that, and there will be pain this time.
And for the
will be pain. Yeah.
For the most part, people don't know what chip is in their computer. They don't care what chip is in their computer. And if you're like a lot of people, you never install another app. You use all the apps that just came with your mail.
And if you do that, you'll be fine.
You'll be fine because all the Apple apps are optimized.
Two things you need to know. One, you do not have an M1 chip right now. You simply do not.
Right.
But secondly, if you only ever use the stuff that came with the system, then indeed you will have no problem.
And what's,
because the like I said, the golden things, Apple's own stuff, and Microsoft Office, they say will be ready almost immediately.
And Adobe has announced they're going to make their creative cloud apps compatible too.
Right. And that's cloud stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you're running Lightroom or Photoshop, those will be a while.
Yeah.
Lightroom, like I said, next month.
Yep.
Or first of the year anyway, and Photoshop sometime next year. They don't even have an idea when.
Yep. One of the neat things about the M1-based computers is since the M1 is based on the A-series in the iPhones, all of your iPhone apps will run on Apple Silicon Mac.
Right, so and that's very cool.
Right, all those great games that are only available on the iPhone, you can now play on your Mac.
So it's N1?
M.
M.
Which was
is in Mac.
Supposedly for Mac, right. But they already had a motion coprocessor called the M1.
Right.
A few years ago. Forget about that. Don't you?
Yeah, we don't talk about
now
that.
Now it's M1 for Mac.
Right.
Well, I was thinking.
Oh, Microsoft Access used to be a terminal program.
Yeah.
Forget about that, too.
Because there's an N1MM program that we use in the
ham
world.
No, this is M1. the other thing is those apps. I've been using Android apps on my Chromebook for quite a while now, and it's great because there are some apps that are just really easy and convenient to use. They boot up, they load up faster because they're so small, and they work great. And I think you'll find that the ability to do that will really enhance your usage. And you know, I've said this before, Chromebook can run four operating systems.
Yep.
And it's nice to be able to see that you'll be able to do something at least similar to that.
And also will make future Mac apps easier to build for iOS developers. Because when you decide to develop a program, you have to decide what OS to put it on. And right now, most new programs are coming out for iOS because that's where the money is. You can make an awful lot of money in the App Store.
Yeah.
Even with all the complaints about Apple taking 30%, you can make an awful lot of money in the App Store.
You absolutely can. Yep.
Which, remember, is a lot less than the 90% that the distribution and big box stores would have taken out of your boxed software.
Right.
And then so by being able to make that iOS app and also cross-compile it to work on a Mac, you've just increased the audience of people that could buy your app.
Right. I have to say I feel bad for Google. For 3 years, they've been building their own chip. And they were set to announce it in a few months. Now it's going to look like also-rans. Although they've been working on it for 3 years.
I haven't heard that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's been under the radar.
That's bad on their part.
Yeah. Well, yes. Yeah. That's Google.
Yeah.
You know, they don't announce anything until it's done, and then they don't sell it well, and then eventually they charge you for it. That story's coming up.
Now, a lot of people have talked about, will this hurt Intel, switching away from the Intel chips? Apple is a very, very small part of Intel. In fact, even PCs are a relatively small part of Intel, so probably it's not going to hurt but Windows developers and Windows system companies are looking at other chips too, because the main reason Apple switched away is that Intel chips aren't getting as fast as they should, and they're stuck on what are they on 10, 12 nanometers?
Right.
AMD is
kicking butt.
Yeah, it's pushing up. Yep.
Well, they've always done it. AMD from day one, even though they were rated a little different, they always did more per clock cycle.
Right, and that's what these M1 chips do, and that's what Google's new chip will do.
Apple doesn't even advertise the clock speed.
Right, because it's unimportant. It hasn't been important for a very long time.
Right. No, right.
I will say, before we go to the phones, I will say that I read an article from a guy who was talking about this is before the M1 chip was announced, talking about the new Google chip and how it'll be much cheaper for them to make it and how it'll cost them less because they're not paying somebody else for it, and so that we'll see the savings. And I laughed.
Yeah.
Because that's true of the M1 chip. We're not going to see any savings from that either.
No.
But we see the performance advantage.
Well, I'm not saying there are no advantages. I'm just saying we're not going to see a monetary lowering Mini is cheaper. Didn't it drop a little bit?
Yeah, it dropped a little bit. They didn't make the new computers more expensive, which was a
fear.
But it's got 8 GPU cores, 8 CPU cores, 16 neural cores.
Right.
So it's a 32-core processor.
Right. And that's great. But, the person who was naively saying, we'll start seeing lower prices. Not going to happen.
The big problem and the trend that's happening across the PC industry is both the RAM and the storage are built in to this chip. Yeah. Which makes it incredibly fast. We used to talk about L1 cache, L2 cache, because it was so much faster than DRAM. Well, now all your RAM is in the chip, which makes it really fast and means you can't upgrade it ever.
You can't upgrade it ever. Yep. That's the important thing to remember.
Yep.
We're not used to that. Anyway, why don't we, just for the heck of it, head on over to the phones, talk to Ed from Ithaca, who's been patiently waiting. Hi there, Ed. What's up?
Good morning, guys. I'm really glad you're here, and I'm also glad I'm a member.
Everybody love to hear that. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you, Ed.
Are you on a speakerphone?
Okay, my Yahoo email account got hacked.
Yes, every Yahoo account got hacked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they vacuumed up my address book, which is how I found out, because I got a message myself on another account. So within the hour or so, I had discovered what was wrong. They changed the reply to email to a different address.
Right.
I changed that back finally. But I'm having problems now. I'm still not getting messages or not consistently getting messages on that account. Even when I send them to myself from another account, as I'm testing it that way.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering, what can I do?
Well, the first thing you can do is get a different account.
Yeah,
go
to Gmail.
A different service.
We've been saying for a long time now, Yahoo is the last, probably, email services that you want to use. It's a good one to set up junk mail.
Yeah, it's excellent for that.
If you want to use junk mail, you know, have things, if you go to websites and, you know, you really don't want your, say, email address getting out, you can always use your Yahoo email address.
Right.
But for regular stuff, we recommend Gmail.
They are very inconsistent as to how quickly you get email, if you get it at all.
On Yahoo.
On Yahoo. They are inconsistent on how quickly they send email, if they send it at all. They're having massive problems right now in general. The other important thing, before I forget, is if you have used your Yahoo password anywhere else, change those immediately.
Yep.
Immediately. Because those are the one. Because if they've got one password, they've got all your other accounts that use that password.
And if you used Yahoo as a recovery account for any other service, like a bank or Amazon or things like that,
right.
Change those passwords too. Because the first thing bad guys will often do is I'll go to PayPal and submit my change of request, or I forgot my password, and it sends them an email. Well, I'm in your email, so now I can get into your money account.
Right. So you want to make sure that, and I'm sorry, I wish I had a better answer for you. I wish I had an easier answer for you. I truly understand that everybody's online identity is based in their email address, and I get that. But Yahoo has just become rather rapidly totally unreliable and a bad place to be. So first, change your password. Second, check every bit of your Yahoo account, you know, like you said, the reply to address and everything else, to make sure those are right. And if you used your Yahoo password anywhere else, change it immediately and check. In addition, if you use two-factor authentication, if you're not using two-factor authentication, you should be. And the best one is to use something like the Google Authenticator or the Apple Authenticator, rather than just text messaging. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's just the way Yahoo is these days. Have we depressed you, Ed?
Yeah,
I think Ed is gone.
Hello.
The other thing,
I think we lost.
The other thing we lost, Ed. I think he's depressed.
Is check the spam folder on the Yahoo website. Because sometimes messages get put into the spam on the website before they're delivered to your IMAP inbox.
Right.
So you may not see them on your computer. You may your computer mail program. You may have to go to the website first.
Right. Yahoo just isn't.
And Verizon still wanted to buy them for $1 billion. That's just ridiculous.
Well, okay.
So that means that they're worth a lot more than $1 billion.
Right.
In advertising revenue.
Also, let us remember that Frontier is using Yahoo.
Yeah.
So if you have a Frontier account, all of this applies to you as well. It is almost 99.999% guaranteed that your account has been hacked. So you need to do all that checking as well.
I still try and get my wife off of Yahoo. She tried to send me a simple email to me. It took 15 minutes.
Yeah.
For me to finally get it.
Yep.
Because she goes, there, I sent it to you. Okay. She goes, well, aren't you going to look at it? I says, it hasn't even come yet. She goes, how do you know? I says, it shows up on my watch.
Yep.
I says, it was literally almost 15, 16 minutes later. I just finally got it. She goes, really? Yep. I go, yeah, see?
Yep. It's.
She goes, wow.
And I hate to say that because people have been using Yahoo for 30 years. But recently, it has become unreliable and unsecure. So if you are using Yahoo, and we've been saying this forever, get a different account somewhere. If you are using Frontier, you are using Yahoo, so get a different account somewhere. Get an account, in any case, as we've been saying for years, get an account that is not linked to your internet service provider.
And
that way, if you change providers, you don't have to go through the hassle at that point of also changing your email address.
And now's a good time, you know, to start to do that. You know, you could still keep the one, get the other one, and slowly wean people off, you know, from sending it to your Yahoo account and sending it to a Gmail account. You don't have to do it, you know, boom, cold turkey.
Right.
You can slowly have people as you do it, because you might say, oh, I got hundreds of people. All right, that's fine. But you'll see them as they trend and go over to the Gmail.
Right.
And you're doing them a favor, too.
Yeah.
Because of the junk that comes along with Yahoo, you don't, you know, they can get infected, too.
And Yahoo literally lost every one of their 3 billion user accounts. There was a story at the time, and they didn't tell anybody.
Right.
There was a story at the time where the security chief goes to the executives and said there's something weird on the mail server that you know, it looks like it's copying everything, and you know, we really need to see who's breaking into our system. And they said, shut up, go away, don't tell us.
Yeah.
And so he quit.
Yes.
And then it was announced that over, you know, 3 billion Yahoo users, all of their email addresses and passwords were leaked.
Yep. Yeah. I had a Yahoo account. Thank heaven I never actually used it for anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's still out there. Yeah. I haven't logged in 5 years.
I got an email from Yahoo in my recovery account, in my normal email, saying, you haven't logged in a while. If you want to keep using Yahoo, you should log in. So I just logged in now. There's 900 unread messages.
I should probably log in and see what I get.
All junk and spam. All political recently.
I'm sure.
Top couple hundred.
Yeah.
No, I never got into it. I had Netscape. Mm-hmm. And AOL.
Well, Yahoo was one of the early ones. So that's why a lot of people still have it.
Yep. Yeah. And I agree. Like I said, your email address is in many ways your online identity. I fully understand that. The problem is that it is your online identity. Mm-hmm. And all 3 billion people have been hacked. So you, if you have a Yahoo account, you have been hacked. And the important thing to remember is if you have used the same password somewhere else, that other account is in danger.
Yep.
You should change that password immediately. Those passwords immediately.
There was also a strange case where if you hadn't logged in for a while, it's currently 12 months, but I don't remember what it was then, they will consider your account abandoned and make the address available for somebody else.
Yep.
Without deleting your mail.
Yes.
So now somebody new gets that address and they log in and all of your mail is there.
So if you have account information or anything else in there, they get it.
Your recovery password requests.
Yeah,
your,
don't use Yahoo. I'm sorry. Yeah. Just don't.
Now on Microsoft, they delete after 270 days of inactivity. And on Google, they delete after 9 months of inactivity.
Right. Right. Is that music? Okay. We're going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We will get to you after the break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, the people on the phone, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It is Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Don't forget, tomorrow night, 9 p.m., Jitsi. It's the first pinned item on the Soundbites website. Join us. In a video chat, we'll be answering computer questions, chit-chatting about stuff, and it'll be a fun time. We do it every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Now to the phones. Doug from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Doug. What's up?
Well, speaking of pain that you mentioned earlier, late last year I updated from Windows 7 to Windows 10, and this is on about a 5-year-old Latitude with 4 gigs of RAM. And Windows 10 just thrashes the hard disk constantly. You know, if I crank up Task Manager, even if there is no update going on, it's just it never stops.
Right. So,
anyway, yeah. Well, wrong. It is wrong. It's evil. But anyway,
right. So it's evil, but it's you're right that it's doing that.
Yeah. So anyway, I did a dual boot thing with Ubuntu, and I use that most of the time now, which is a pleasure. But there's still some apps on my Windows installation that I'd like to use now and then if I have a whole day to wait for Windows to calm down.
Right.
And then I recently read, you know, it might be a good idea to download a Windows 10 image that you could use in the future if you need to.
Yes.
And so I did that. I haven't used it, though. And then I ran into an article on another newsletter that said, you know, here's how to do a completely refreshed installation of Windows 10, which blows away everything on the hard disk, including the registry, which is good.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm wondering, have you done that, and you think it'll make much of a difference on a machine like this? Because I do see people saying that Windows 10 will run reasonably well with 4 gig. Not great, but...
Well, it runs reasonably well, but it does a lot of swapping to the swap space on the hard drive. That's what you're seeing in terms of
activity. Yeah, and he's not changing the hardware. It's still five-year-old machine with only 4 gig of memory.
And, right.
And
so
if you want to run something else on top of Windows, like your web browser,
right.
That's added. Yeah.
Right. So 4 gig is the minimum for Windows 10, no matter what Microsoft says.
Mm-hmm.
4 gig is the minimum for Windows 10, and at that, it's going to use up some swap space. And as Steve says, if you've got a couple of things open, you're going to be swapping constantly, and the only way to fix that is more RAM.
Yeah, okay, I was afraid of that.
Yeah, sorry.
It just needs more dance space.
Yep.
That's two sorries in two calls.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're 100% so far.
Theoretically, you could put an SSD in to make the read writes faster, but because there's so many of them, you're going to wear out the SSD a lot.
Right.
Faster. And it's going to be doing a lot of it because it's still 4 gig and it's slower architect.
Right. And as you saw with Ubuntu, Ubuntu takes up much less RAM and is therefore much happier in 4 gig.
Exactly. And that's why I'm using it just for email and a little bit of browsing, and that's all I need.
Yeah,
right.
It's a miracle. I mean, the hard disk never gets used unless I'm starting it down or doing an update, and that's it.
Right, so. Right. Mm-hmm. Because it 4 gig is more than enough for Ubuntu and not really enough for Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had a better answer for you. But
all right, so don't waste any time with the reinstall. It's not going to really do much.
No, it might. Well, it might. Do some, but...
Reinstall Neverware.
Reinstall Ubuntu and leave it at that.
Yeah.
But reinstalling Windows 10 isn't really going to do much.
Not going to buy you much.
In fact, it's probably going to kill Ubuntu, because when Windows 10 installs clean, it assumes it owns the hard drive.
Yeah, I figured I'd have to do that, a reinstall of Ubuntu, if it was even possible. So,
right.
Yeah. Okay. All right, you ruined my day, but thank you.
It's our pleasure. Thank you very much.
Well, actually, we actually saved you.
Yeah,
we did.
Well,
think about it, because if you hadn't called
for RAM, you know,
So sometimes RAM for older computers is getting more expensive because they aren't making as much of it.
Right,
and we saved you all that time and frustration of not going through all those steps.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, I got to thank you for something.
Yeah.
I don't know when you said this or if it's on your website or you must have said it on the air. You tell people that nobody's ever invented a speakerphone that works.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I tell that to my friends who are addicted to it. And it's great. Some of them don't call me anymore. It works.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What I blame is television.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are always talking into their phones with them away from their faces. That's so we can hear both sides of the conversation on television.
Yeah.
It's right. Not the way you're supposed to use a cell phone.
And that's the way I always tell folks, you know, especially when they're calling here at the studio, you know, because I can hear it. And it's just terrible. Not that we're super professionals and all that other stuff, but it doesn't sound for good radio. And that's the truth. And it's just like the same that I have to do battle with folks when they call and they talk real low.
Yeah.
Pick up your phone. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's anyway. Like... Talk up!
Or the one that kills me is I have a friend who starts to talk, puts me on speakerphone, and then walks away from the phone.
Oh, that... Oh,
it's a phone! I'd carry it with you!
Yep. Hang up. I'd hang up.
Yeah.
We all remember we had those giant long cords on the only phone, which was in the kitchen.
Yeah, right.
And they were stretched.
Yeah.
And when you could go to the store, because there was no online sale, when you could go to the store and find a 6-foot cord or... Holy moly, a 10-foot cord?
Yep.
You were in heaven.
And then you stretch it out so bad that even the curliness isn't in the cord anymore.
Yeah.
You could mow the lawn.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Thanks, anyway, Doug.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. We should probably read this next news item while Dave gets on the phone there. After 5 years of offering unlimited free photo backups at high quality, Google Photos will start charging for storage once more, once more than 15 gigs on the account has been used. The change will happen on June 1st of 2021, and it comes with other Google Drive policy changes, like counting Google Workspace documents and spreadsheets against the same cap. Google is also introducing a new policy of deleting data from inactive accounts that haven't been logged in for at least 2 years. All photos and documents uploaded before June 1st will not count against the 15 gig cap, so you have plenty of time to upload everything you've ever taken to Google Photos and decide whether or not to continue using Google Photos or switch to another cloud storage provider. Only photos uploaded after June 1st will begin counting against the cap. Google already counts original quality photos uploaded against the storage cap in Google Photos. However, taking away unlimited backup for high quality photos and videos, which are automatically compressed for more efficient storage, also takes away one of the service's biggest selling points. Of course, it's not selling because it's free. It was the photo service where you just didn't have to worry about how much storage you had. As a side note, Pixel owners will still be able to There's no promise on future Pixels. Current Pixel owners will be able to upload high-quality photos for free after June 1st without those images counting against their cap. It's not as good as Pixel's original deal of getting unlimited original quality, but it's a small bonus for the few people who buy Google devices. Google points out that it offers more free storage than others, and that's true. You get 15 gigabytes instead of the paltry 5 that Apple's iCloud gives you. And it also claims that 80% of Google Photo users won't hit that 15 gig cap for at least 3 years. The company will send alerts and warnings when you begin approaching that cap. Google is also putting new storage management tools into Google Photos, including a tool that makes it easier to find and delete photos you might not want anyway, like blurry images or screenshots. That should be showing up soon. Google is also going to show a more useful personalized estimate of how much longer a storage tier will last in terms of time instead of gigabytes. It estimates each user's average uploads over time to guess how much longer they'll be able to use their current tier. So are you using Google's unlimited photo storage? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Or text us with a whole lot of information at 585-205-8887.
Now, that's just for the higher quality. If you're just using standard.
No, it's for everything.
They're changing it.
Unless you have a Pixel phone, and then you can still use the lower, the high quality, which is not the high quality.
I'm okay.
You're okay for now.
Yeah.
The next phone you buy, that's not guaranteed anymore. So, right now, if you have a Pixel phone and you're using the high quality, which is actually the low quality, because the higher quality is original quality, that will still be free. But any other phone, or if you upload it from your computer or whatever, that will count against your 15 gig cap. Now, let's put that in perspective. 15 gigs is a lot of storage.
Yeah, that's one heck of a lot of photos.
It's a lot of photos and documents and everything else. And it is still three times its nearest competitor, which is iCloud, which is 5 gig. And if you wanted a terabyte of storage, it's $1.99 a month, $2 a month, $24 a year.
Yep. They say they have 4 trillion photos stored.
Yeah.
And get 28 billion new photos a week.
Yep. And so they've finally realized that. Storage costs money, as Steve said, they're charging you now. That's just the way that works.
I'm trying to find that link you can go to see.
And again, it's not until next June, and anything you upload now doesn't count against that cap. So if you've got a bunch of photos you've been promising yourself you were going to put up there,
get them up there.
You've got until June 1st.
Yeah, we thought Apple was bad at 5 gigs, but Dropbox is only 2 gigs.
Yeah. Google Drive is the biggest at 15 gig.
For a while, Microsoft would give you 25 if you also had an Xbox account.
Right.
And they stopped doing that.
Right.
In fact, for a while, Microsoft had free unlimited, and people took them at their word and started uploading terabytes of videos.
Yep. All right, so back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi. Well, I was spoken to you before about my Yahoo account, and I got disconnected in the middle of that call.
Oh, that was what happened. Okay.
Yeah, but I did hear some of what you said. You said I could check on, for spam on their website, and I'm wondering how I go about doing that.
Go to yahoo.com and log into your account on the website, and there's a spam folder on the left in your list of folders.
Oh, okay. And is there any way to, when I send out my messages saying, here's my new address, to do multiple accounts at the same, multiple addresses at the same time?
Sure, put them all into the BCC field. Theoretically, you can put all the addresses you want in the to field, but that
would
mean everyone else would see everyone's address. So use the BCC line.
Yeah,
so they
what we recommend people do whenever they send out emails to multiple people is put one person, or better yet, yourself. You say your new address in the to field, and everybody else in the BCC field. So it is blind. Carbon copy.
If you remember carbon paper.
Right. yeah. So that way nobody else sees anybody else's address. I wish more people would do that. I'm sick of getting stuff that's been sent to 100 people and everybody now has my address.
Right. But what I'm wondering is there a way to enter the addresses on either the two or the BCC rather than doing it individually?
Oh.
Create a group and then you put them in the group.
Right, so you still got to do it one way or the other, but
if you're using a contact management program, you can click and drag. So if you're using Thunderbird or a mail program, most of the time that will let you click and drag.
Unfortunately, not.
Yeah.
Okay.
The website tools are very bad. That's why most people like using an email program.
Right. Most of the website tools are terrible.
Okay.
Sorry.
Do you have time for another question, or do you have other people waiting?
No, we don't have anybody else on the line at the moment, so you win. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, a few weeks ago, you said something about not turning off your laptop or turning off your laptop, and I didn't quite catch that, and I'm wondering what your advice is.
This is a religious question, Ed, and I usually don't answer those unless you're buying me beer, but okay. Some people never turn their computer off. And if your computer is able to handle it thermally, that is to say, it doesn't overheat and it's got good ventilation, a good fan, yada, yada, whether it's a desktop or a laptop, then leaving it on all the time is fine. If it tends to get really warm or whatever, then turning it off is probably a very good idea. But the other thing to remember is that when you leave it on all the time, you can then set up things that can be done overnight, like backing up to a website, a storage online somewhere. So that can happen like at 3 a.m. when you're not using your computer.
Also scanning for viruses.
Scanning for viruses and all of those
spyware.
Things.
It's almost become more of an environmental issue in these last few years, that there's a lot of wasted electricity from computers running when they don't need to be.
Right.
So most of them will go into some sort of sleep mode so that they don't use as much power. The switch from CRTs to LCDs was a huge drop in power.
Right.
So if you can turn your monitor off, if you want to leave your computer on, at least turn your monitor off. And in most laptops, you close the lid, it goes to sleep and then doesn't use as much power.
Right.
Okay.
And, and then typically when you have to install an OS update, it will want to restart anyway.
Yeah, right.
Usually it'll crash to make you restart, and then that's when you need
to
restart.
That's kind of nice, yeah.
Yeah, great. Okay, very good. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your help.
All right, thanks. Yeah. To get back to Google Photos.
People are angry. They feel
angry.
Betrayed is a word going
around.
Well,
because you had something free, and now you're going to have to pay for it. Again, it's $25 a year for a terabyte of data space.
Yeah, that's not even one coffee a month.
That's exactly right. It is at the Flower City Coffee Company.
Yeah,
but I've been talking for a while about pCloud and how that's $175 for half a terabyte, but that's a lifetime thing. and it works in the background and loads you up. And I've got all my photos, all my documents, everything I've ever written or done or taken or anything up there. And I'm using only about 300 gig. And that's, you know, I'm a pack rat. I'm talking about everything from the 80s on up.
Mm-hmm.
I've got conversations I had on a BBS that I saved. And I've still only got 300 gig. So if you're paying for a terabyte, it is really unlikely that anything you actually care to say, unless you're doing high-end video and you do high-end photography and you want to keep every iteration of every picture you've ever taken, a terabyte is going to last you your entire life.
All right, we got a couple questions. As a matter of fact, one on that vein, it says soundbites. I find it ironic that Google will allow you to store megapixels for free if you buy just one pixel. Art.
Oh, very funny.
Bada bing, try the veal. We're on it at 11.
How do you facepalm over text?
Yeah, right, you can.
All right, the other one here is from Jerry in Rochester asks, Windows 10 question, does dism/online/cleanup-image/restore-health get rid of rootkits? Thanks.
I have...
I doubt it.
What?
I doubt it.
Yeah. The problem with rootkits in general is that they run before anything else. That's they run at the root level and they run first. And what that means is they can protect themselves against being removed by anything, including other root things.
And DASM is an image management service, so
right.
That doesn't.
If you restore an old image, theoretically, it wipes out the current image and replaces it. Doesn't mean that image isn't infected. B, it doesn't necessarily mean here's the other problem. If you have a rootkit, it is on your drive, but it is also in memory. And it has, because it ran first, it protects itself in a protected area of memory. So even if you tell the machine, stop what you're doing, wipe everything out, and reload, it's in an area of memory that doesn't get wiped out because it's said, don't use this area.
Right.
So, no, it will not help then either. The only way to absolutely assure yourself you have removed the rootkit is to take the drive out of that machine and clean it using another drive. And I don't recommend you doing that yourself for 100 reasons. So take it to a reputable dealer and have them do that for you.
I would even recommend using a different operating system because if you have a Windows rootkit and plug it into another Windows computer,
it could be virulent enough to
those things are what we used to call TSRs.
Right.
Terminate and stay resident.
Well, except that they're even worse.
Because it shoves itself over in a little corner. And the only way we used to ever get rid of rootkits was, like you said, we literally had to boot it up on our test bench where it was a separate drive. So the initial boot up was never part of this drive, didn't know of it. So it was just a separate drive, like a D drive or E drive, whatever it popped up. And then that way we could use the software, and we had to literally, because by default it wants to go to the root, hard drive, we had to point it to this other hard drive to go looking for this particular software.
Right.
And it could find it, because it didn't know it was supposed to wake up yet.
Right.
And that's how you can secretly, get it. Because like you said, if it is on a root kit, on a root drive, it knows it's got to put it off into that corner, like you said, into Never Never Land where it can't be found.
Right. It's hiding in a corner of memory. And even if you remove it from the hard drive, the first thing it does running in memory is put itself back.
Yep.
So one thing you can do if you don't want to remove it from your drive, you can boot up a live Ubuntu CD or thumb drive, and those generally have, most of them, if it's a live drive, has a clean up your machine section that you can run. Again, if you boot it as a thumb drive, the first thing that will happen when you plug in that thumb drive is the rootkit will try to infect it. So if you've got the kind of thumb drive that can be locked, and those are very rare these days, you should lock it first. Otherwise, you should then be prepared to completely wipe it out and never use it again.
I found this new thumb drive where you could put micro SD cards in it. You can put in a regular SD card, and I love it because...
The regular SD cards can be locked.
Yeah, the regular SD card, I can sit there, plug it in, slide the little lock on it so I can
boot
from...
Well, do it the other way. You slide the lock, then you...
Yeah, put it in. Well, the lock is always on anyways. Yeah. I mean, once it, you know, I load it up, the lock comes on it, and I don't let anything get to it. And that's one thing we always did for all the years that when we were in business, we always held it true.
Right. So, yeah, be very careful with those things. All right, that music tells us you have wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense. But don't go away, because we're going to have a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We'll have more of Steve Ray, more of Dave Enright, more of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole lot more of you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. Don't forget, you can join us by calling 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Text us at 585-205-8887. Or join us online tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern just by going to soundbites.org/Jitsi, J-I-T-S-I, and signing in at 9 p.m. And we will see you in just a few minutes on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That must mean it's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And our next caller is Judy from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Judy. What's up?
Well, I'm not sure you can help me, but I have this Pixel 3a XL phone. And whenever I use Hey Google like 6 or 7 times in a row, the next thing that happens, I don't know, in the background, I don't get any calls for about 3 or 4 days until I realize that I haven't gotten any calls, because when I call my phone, it'll say, this is the Google assistant, why are you calling? Why does that do that?
Google Assistant is a program in Google phones that's designed to help you screen calls. And it's on most Android phones, I think. You should be able to turn it off.
I do turn it off, but then when I use Google, like I was sitting with a friend the other day and we were checking several things on the internet, and then I noticed I wasn't getting any calls again. So then I called my phone from my house phone, and the assistant was on again, and I don't know how to permanently turn it off.
Let's start with where it should be in. There should be a Google app.
Yeah.
Right, and in that you should go to More, Settings, and Google Assistant. And then in the Assistant tab, you can turn off the Google Assistant.
Yours is trying to help you.
Well, I think I've been doing that. But then it goes back on, and I don't know why it does it.
Oh, I bet. You know what? I bet. What kind of phone do you have? Is it a Samsung?
No, it's a Pixel 3A XL.
Oh, that's what I have.
Yeah, me too.
And it may be that you have...
Is there an auto?
You know what? It might be on the home button. There's an auto. There's an activate for the home button. And sometimes when you tap the home button, it launches the assistant. So how do you do that? So first turn it off, like I said. So what you want to do is you go into Assistant, and then you select Phone, and then you say, and then you turn off Google Assistant.
Yeah,
but then you have to turn off Voice Access, because then voice commands can still turn it back on. So what you have to do, so you can no longer then say, hey, followed by the word Google, and then ask it something. But that's what often turns on the Assistant. And so to turn that off, in Settings, under Apps and Notifications, under Default Apps.
I know how to turn that off, but I don't want to do that because I don't want to have to turn it on every time I want to ask a question.
Well, I get that. I do get that. But that's...
so, it's either on or off.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm constantly struggling with a ghost.
Right. All right, so... Okay, there is an Assist app, Assist and Voice Input. Right? So you have... let me get my phone out. Hold on here. Let me see. There should be an Assist app. Hold on. I think you get to it here.
Device Assistant?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's Assistant Voice, Assistant Settings. And so if you go to... the Assistant Voice, you can turn that off from your phone. That turns off speech output and things like that. You can turn off the device that's linked to your assistant. But you really, I'm not sure quite what you've turned on. You might want to check, because I've also got a Pixel 3a XL, and I do not have that problem. So my thought is you've got some app or something you've turned on, you've installed, that's automatically turning it on all the time.
Well,
is there a turn off forever or a turn off for an hour option?
Well, yeah, but the problem is she doesn't want to turn off Assistant entirely because she still wants to be able to use it to say, hey, followed by the word Google, followed by her question.
Yeah.
She just doesn't want it to be answering the phone for her.
Yeah, I found an article that I just posted on our website on how to stop Google Assistant from popping up randomly. And there's different settings for the different voice assistants and the different assist features.
So what website is that?
Soundbites.org.
And you'll see a link there for that. Now... Call screening itself is a separate thing. So you can find call screening in the voice app. Do you have Google Voice app on your phone? Probably.
I don't know. Might have to look.
Yeah. Well, find the voice app. I believe it's just under voice, for V for voice, not G for Google Voice. I think it's just voice.
I think I've seen that.
Yes, it's just voice. And then in the top left there, tap menu, the three bars for menu, and then settings, and you can turn call screening on or off. And what it sounds like is it's turned itself on, or you've turned it on, or it's turned on, and you can then turn it off there.
Okay, I'll try that.
Okay. But other than that, I'm not quite sure what to tell you because there's... I have the same phone and I don't have that problem.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, other than that, I'll have to just go down to the T-Mobile store and ask them.
Right, it may be some T-Mobile thing. I'm on Verizon, so I don't have some of the apps that come with a T-Mobile phone.
Yeah, I was always on Verizon, and this time I tried T-Mobile, and I mean, so far it's been okay. But the other thing I wanted to tell you is that I had a HP Envy printer, 7610, I think it was. And it was grinding. So I thought that the printer was, you know, headed for the dumpster.
Right.
I checked the ink, and the ink was low, but it wasn't to the point where it said replace ink.
Mm-hmm.
And I had ink left, but in the meantime, I ordered a new printer. So I got the new printer all set up, and then I thought, you know what, I'm going to just try putting in the ink in the old printer and see what happens.
Sure.
So I did, and this dumb thing is working fine.
No, of course it is. Of course it is.
It so may.
Is it possible that all it wanted was fresh ink?
It is certainly possible.
The cartridge may have been a little bit crooked.
Yeah, right. Or the cartridge could have had some residue on it that was causing the issue.
You mean the one that was in the machine all that time before I put the new ones in?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can get dried ink on the bottom of the jets because it's an inkjet printer.
Right, and so there is a cleaning cycle that you can put it through.
I did that.
Yeah, and I was about to say sometimes that doesn't work if the problem with inkjet printers is if you don't use them regularly, they clog up.
And if you use them a lot, then you spend a lot of money on ink.
Spend a lot of money on ink. So
laser printers may be a little more expensive initially, and but they're a lot cheaper in the long run.
Yeah. And just taking those cartridges in and out, if there was any residue at the bottom, you might have knocked it loose.
And it could have been grinding on a chunk of ink that had dried up.
Right.
Interesting.
Sorry, Judy.
No, that's okay. That's why I love your show.
Thank you, Judy.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is a week where we're saying sorry a lot.
Yeah.
And that's the way that works. But, yeah, what I discovered a while ago is, you know those new cola soda machines where you just punch buttons and magic happens?
Yeah.
Those use giant inkjet cartridges full of the
syrup
in them. So it's like giant.
It's not even the tanks that we're used to behind soda phones?
No, they're inkjet cartridges full of the syrup. It's hysterical. I saw the guy changing them one day. I ran over, and luckily he recognized me as opposed to shooting me. And I said, you got to hand me one. I got to hold one of these because they're giant and they're...
What was it? I'm sorry.
Those soda machines where you select it all from a menu and it just dispenses. The soda is a syrup in a giant inkjet cartridge.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's not a tank. It's a giant inkjet cartridge.
Cool.
And I ran over to this guy who was changing it. And I said, you got to let me hold one of these. You just got to. Luckily, like I said, he recognized me as opposed to thinking I was molesting him. And he handed it to me, and it's heavy and it's big, and you slot it in just like you do an inkjet printer, and you're done.
Ooh.
It's hysterical.
Yep. Well, that was always sort of the joke about soda, is that your 99-cent soda is about 2 cents of syrup, about 5 cents of cup, and water.
Yeah, that's all it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're not making money selling soda, you're really doing something wrong.
That's why they, a lot of the restaurants and places will offer free refills on soda, because that you pay $1.99 for a large soda. They made a fortune on you already.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You're looking at maybe a nickel's worth of
free refills.
More like 2 cents. So how many refills can you get?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Walworth, New York. What's up, Brian?
Hi there. I sent this in as a text message, but something's come up. I got to get on my way. So I figured I'd call in.
Okay.
My VPN for my home system is coming up for renewal. I'm retired on a fixed income. I'm trying to decide if spending the money on a VPN for a home system is worth it. A couple of years ago, I was traveling a lot and therefore logging into some pretty sketchy sites, and I had VPN then, but now I live out in the middle of nowhere. I've got my internet access is through Spectrum Cable. I've got a Netgear router. There's a lot of security systems on that. Do I need it?
No.
Yeah, generally speaking, a VPN for home user does two things. It hides where you go from your internet provider.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
And it allows you to watch content you're not licensed for in your country.
Right. So, but that's really all it does. Mm-hmm. What a VPN is supposed to do is hide who you are and where you're coming from. Well, if the VPN is on your home system, it doesn't hide where you're coming from.
Right.
So,
okay, well, but even for traveling, I was under the impression that it made it more secure as far as getting hacked. Am I wrong?
If you're logging in from off-site into your home and then from your home somewhere else, they think you're still home.
No, if I was traveling by boat. I had a laptop with me. A lot of the marinas offer, quote, free internet access, but I always figured that was a way to get my system hacked.
If you
VPN protected on that, am I wrong about that?
If you're not logging in through the VPN in your home, then you're not using your VPN. I'm confused. Is the VPN in your router or is it out on the internet somewhere?
The VPN is installed on my laptop computer.
Oh, I see. So it's still going somewhere. But yet, no, you really don't need it anymore.
Okay. That's traveling again, is that a good idea to do, or is that a waste of money there too?
As Steve said, it really does a couple of things. One is it prevents other people from seeing where you're going. That's useful.
That part I don't care. I don't do anything.
Right.
Yeah, but
And the other thing is it does is let you pretend you're from another country. And if you're not interested in those two things,
save
then
the
you don't really need a VPN. As long as all the sites you're going to have HTTPS access and you see the little locked padlock.
Yeah, most of those don't. I mean, if I'm off traveling on my boat, you know, I'm just, you know, checking my email and occasionally looking for boat parts and
Your email,
like that.
Yeah, your email is encrypted.
Your email should be encrypted. You should see the lock on your email program.
That's different now.
Right.
Yeah, most every website is encrypted now.
Okay.
Over the last few years, when it got noticed that that the NSA was spying on everybody, virtually every website started encrypting themselves. So
All right. Well, good to know.
Yeah. It hasn't been a problem. The problem now is that the web browsers, instead of warning you when a site's encrypted by putting the padlock up, they assume the site will be encrypted, and if it's not, you get a warning.
For some browsers, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you often have to make sure that the site you're on really is encrypted.
Yeah, I'm usually using Chrome for a browser. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should be fine. Yeah.
And Chrome will warn you when a site is not encrypted, and that is getting to be very, very rare these days.
Right. And so if you're logging into your email provider through Chrome, you should know that it's locked.
Yeah.
And if you're going to a site that isn't protected, don't put in a password. You know, if you're just browsing, it doesn't matter if it's protected or not. If you're going to buy something, make sure it's protected. My suggestion is to use something like PayPal instead of putting in my credit card number.
Oh, yeah, no, I already do that. Yep. And my credit card company also has this way of generating fake
Perfect.
Credit card numbers to use. So
perfect. So, yeah, you don't really need the VPN.
Possible.
Save yourself a few bucks.
And
I appreciate that because, as I said, I'm retired on a fixed income. So
welcome to the club.
And a lot of the commercials you see are hyping up what VPN is just makes you safe on the internet. No, that's not what it really does.
It's not what it does.
And people are getting sucked into these crazy ads.
The Norton 360.
I'm one of the suckies then. That's what I thought.
Yeah, no.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yep.
I appreciate
it. Yes, sir.
Take care.
Have fun.
Take care.
Let us know when your boat's back in the water. We'll be out.
Yeah, VPN used to be a way for you to, in fact, the primary use these days is it's for you to log into your work and connect to your servers and printers at work as if you were sitting at work.
Right. That's what a VPN does. It certainly, if you're doing a lot of sensitive work from a public place, finally, check yourself. Why are you doing that? But secondly, then it would protect you. But it doesn't protect you from anybody, because first, you're encrypted from your laptop to the VPN. But then, by definition, the VPN unencrypts it and then re-encrypts it to send it to whatever website. So you better trust that VPN because it can read your data.
Now, I seem to remember this, and correct me if I'm wrong. Even if you're on an encrypted Wi-Fi, other people on the same encrypted Wi-Fi still can't see your data.
You've all got the same key.
Yeah.
So they can see your data.
Well, they can ish. There are ways to do that, yes. Yeah. I won't say everybody can automatically see it, but there are ways to do that, yes.
They got
to
exert some effort.
Right. But there are ways to do that, and there are programs that make it easy.
Mm-hmm.
Before the days when all internet phone calls were encrypted, there was a program called Vomit, Voice Over Misconfigured Internet Telephones.
And you could listen on
everybody's phone call.
Yeah.
Every phone call.
Well, it was like having the party line.
Exactly.
You could sit there and, just take your phone off the receiver back in the day and listen to any phone call that was going across in your neighborhood.
Yep. But that's all gone now. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
I wondered if you gentlemen had any kind of suggestion. This is weird. A couple of days ago, I was on my, I got an Android and I was on the, searching around for medical information, and all of a sudden I got some kind of these weird pop-ups that said, you've just won so-and-so, click here to do blah, blah, blah. So I hit block, and then I wanted to hit the back arrow to go back to what I was doing, and the phone froze.
Yeah.
I did it three or four times, and it froze. So I turned it off, reset it, thought it'd come back again, went back into the Chrome, bang, it was still there. Happened twice. So I called Samsung, didn't know what else to do. And I was on with three people for 2 hours, and they couldn't do anything, and they wouldn't give me a supervisor. So they said, well, you have to take it to one of these U-Fixes, I-Fix places. So I called the guy, and he said, he does just basically hardware, but he said, bring it over. He said, if you've got ABG on the phone, he said, I might be able to help you. Ironically, as a parenthetical thing, while I was waiting for Samsung, just for the heck of it, I ran the ABG program on my phone, scanned everything, and come and said, oh, you're fine, no problem. This is when my phone was frozen and there was some kind of a bug in there, I'm guessing. Because I looked at my notification page while waiting for Samsung, and the little the Samsung green gremlin came up three times, and it said, you have three viruses on your phone, ? Then it said, click here to resolve. I said, well, wait a minute, something is screwy.
Yeah. So what what you're seeing on all of these is pop-up ads.
It's just an ad on a website you happen to be on.
Mm-hmm. The problem with Chrome or any browser, in fact, on a phone, is that when you bring it up, it brings up the last page you were on. And so you're getting that same pop-up again and again and again.
So you need to go into your settings and clear the cache.
And so it won't come up with that website again.
Because also it said, there was another one that came up and said, if you don't, said update. It said, we have a new update for this phone. It gave the phone model and everything. And then it said, if you don't update this now, your phone is going to stop working in 24 hours. So I knew it was something.
It's all fake. It's all just pop-up ads.
Yep.
You haven't actually been infected. Just go in and clean your caches. And make sure that that's done, because like I said, the problem is with most phone. I don't know if it's true on Safari as well, but it brings up whenever you open.
It's trying to be helpful.
Yeah, exactly. Whenever you open the browser app, it goes to the last page you were on. Well, if that page has that pop up ad, you're going to keep getting the pop up ad. It doesn't mean you're infected. It means you're hitting the same page over and over and over again.
It's trying to help you.
If you go into your settings and clear your cache, you won't go to that page again.
But my question would be, if I had been stupid enough to click on that, because they had the gremlin and everything, the icon looked perfect, if I would have clicked on that, I thought, well, maybe I would have gone to some bad guy's place.
That's exactly where you would have ended up.
Eventually, it would have asked for a password or a credit card payment to update the thing that it said it needed updating.
Right.
Yeah, like ransomware. So
you got it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I can circumvent that by just going into the cache and clearing that out, and that's all gone. Then,
right? There you should go. Be able to do that without any trouble.
I see. Good. I'll try it. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ed.
Ta-da.
Yep.
So
it was a
single denial of service attack.
Yeah, exactly.
It was denying him service on his one phone.
We've said many times that things like Chromebooks and Android have fewer bugs and Macs and iPhones. But so everybody is susceptible to ads.
Yeah, the threat has
pop
changed.
Up ads. What?
The threat has changed.
The threat has changed. And so you will still get those. You can about 99.99999% of the time just laugh and move on.
Yeah, and folks should notice it. You know, if you go, especially in Google, you go doing searching on something, then all of a sudden you'll notice over on the side all the, you know, relative items
right
to that thing that you were searching now are showing up. Like it, you know, it knows what you want to do.
That's right.
I wish it knew when I bought that thing and stopped showing me ads.
That's the thing. It keeps telling me we found a thing you want. No, you found a thing I bought yesterday.
Yep.
All right, we
should know that because it knows our credit card information.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. It's the longest running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we remain member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites and texts. We have texts.
Yep, we got a couple here. It says, all right, we'll go with the first one. It says, hey, guys, I'm Joe. I have two networks in my house. Computer is on one network, and the printer is on the other network. Is there a way to print to the printer on the other network without changing networks?
You need a network bridge that can bridge the two networks together. Sometimes that's just a special routing switch. Or if your computer has two network connections, like an Ethernet connection and a Wi-Fi connection, then you can be connected to both the networks at once.
Right. The idea is if those networks were designed to be separate, then you do have to bridge them as mm-hmm.
The intention
said.
Is that you can't get from one network to the
right,
other.
Right, right, right. If it's just accidental, you can change that in your router and make them all one network. But if unless you've got two different connector types, you might be able to access it by the IP address of the other one because theoretically the internet protocol will be different. But
unless each network is on the same IP range.
Well, yes, or... they're both non-routable addresses.
Yeah.
In
right.
which case, they cannot route.
Right. And we were stating, you know, I was sitting there trying to wonder why you'd want to do something like that. And,
well,
it's like if you were in a dorm room and, you know, you've got everybody sharing the same network, but yet, you know, you've got your printer off on its own and, you know, you don't want other people printing to it.
Right. So, you know, there are reasons to have it separate.
Yep.
But without some sort of bridge or the ability to create a bridge in your computer with two different network connections. And as Steve said, if you've got both a Wi-Fi and an Ethernet connection, you can do that.
Or you can get a second, like Ethernet or USB to Ether. If
you want. Right. Yep. There are ways to do it, but you have to then set those up and you have to be able to. And doing that is way past what we can talk about.
Yeah. And here without, you know, messing things up.
Right.
All right, the next one is, good afternoon, about Google Photos. My understanding is that the 15 gigs is free applications for combinations of all your Google accounts.
Yes.
So you don't forget, for from now to June 1st, it's not only Google Photos, it's but your email, or Gmail, I should say, Drive, etc. accounts.
Right.
Well, also, isn't it?
It's all the services under one account.
Right.
So if you have two Google accounts, you have 15 gigs in each account.
Right. But yes, and that's always been true in terms of, for example, if somebody is sending you attachments, those attachments count against your storage. They always have, and they will continue to do so. Your email has always counted against your quota, and that will continue to do so. What has changed is the photos and the documents. Documents used to be entirely free. Now, apparently, they will also count.
And that's a good reason, then, to the folks that sit there and save every email ever sent to them, ads and all that other stuff. Take some time, go through them, and delete them.
We've had people who were at RIT for, I don't know, 100 years, and they've had email from the 60s.
Yeah.
And you know what? I get it. If you got an award and, you know, some national organization sent you an email, you want to save that.
Yeah.
But, hey, Bob, let's go to lunch may not be something you need to save from the 80s.
Or different ads for, say, this airline ticket or this travel advisory or, you know, weather reports and everything else.
Then this leads to the inevitable question of, is there a way to do that automatically? Well, yes. Just go in and highlight everything from 2015 and delete it.
I've known people
there's no way to selectively say, you know, is there a computer program that will save the stuff I want? No, it doesn't know what stuff you want.
There is.
And it's, don't believe
your brain and your finger.
Right.
And you take the time and click on it.
Don't believe any of the ads you read about cleaning programs that can clean the junk out of your computer. It doesn't know what junk is either. It'll bring up a list of things.
Exactly right.
Some of them will bring up a list of things and do you want to delete this? Well, if I'd known that, I could have done it myself.
Right. And I still have to go through the list.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
All right, let's. I love this.
I've known people that January 1st, you know, declare bankruptcy, email bankruptcy. They delete all their messages in their inbox.
Oh yeah, okay.
If it was important, they'll mail me back. If it wasn't important, doesn't matter.
Exactly, that makes sense to me. It really does. All right, we've been predicting that many of us would soon be using desktop as a service for a long time. We've been predicting for a long time that we would be. I shouldn't have written this, and I did. Now we can give you an approximate date. By May of 2021, most of you will be able to run Windows from Microsoft's Azure Cloud using Cloud PC. Of course, you've long been able to run Windows remotely. Citrix Systems, after all, starting back in 1989, made a multi-billion-dollar business from offering just such services. Microsoft has been moving towards a subscription desktop as a service model for more than 4 years. Recently, Microsoft released Microsoft 365 and Windows Virtual Desktop. We knew Cloud PC was coming. As far back as last July, Microsoft was looking for a program manager for Microsoft Cloud PC team. The job entailed creating Microsoft Cloud PC, a strategic new offering built on top of Windows Virtual Desktop, to deliver desktop as a service. At its core, Cloud PC provides business customers, blah, 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 who cares. For what's different about Cloud PC from Windows Virtual Desktop from a user's point of view, instead of paying for it on an Azure Cloud uses basis, you'll subscribe to it for a fixed rate. For many businesses and pretty much all home users, being able to budget exactly for a subscription is much more attractive. To me, running Linux for free is much more attractive, but that's up to you. Microsoft will offer medium, heavy, and advanced subscription. There doesn't seem to be a light subscription. The medium plan comes with 2 virtual CPUs, 4 gig of RAM, and 96 gig of SSD storage. It's designed for general purpose use, optimized for cost and flexibility. With the heavy plan, users get all of the above, but they'll have access to 8 gigs of RAM. It's for users with advanced compute needs, optimized for performance and speed. Finally, there's the advanced plan with 8 gig of RAM, 3 virtual CPUs, and an unknown amount of SSD storage. It offers accelerated graphic optimized for scalability and data processing. And now, for the million-dollar question, what's it going to cost? Yep. We don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
Using the Azure VM calculator, I came up with the following absolutely unsubstantiated estimates using one-year reserved virtual machine instances. Currently, if you were to do that on Azure, a medium equivalent would be about $65 a year. Heavy would be $130 a year. And advanced would be about $244 a year. It's possible, even likely, that Microsoft will offer significant discounts for cloud PC. So let's say that puts medium at $25 to $50 a year, heavy at $50 to $100 a year, and advanced $150, $200 a year. You'll be able to run these instances on any system that can run the Microsoft Remote Desktop app. So you can run it on your Mac, you can run it on Linux, you can run it on Chrome, anywhere you want. That includes the Microsoft family and just about everything from Windows 8.1 up. And you'll be able to run it on Mac OS, iOS, Linux, Chromebooks, and Android. It's likely that Microsoft will fully and officially support both Chromebooks and Linux PCs by the time Cloud PC is commercially available. It only makes sense. So, how does paying to run Windows in the cloud sound to you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
We knew it was coming.
We've been saying it for a long time.
Yeah.
And you better have fast internet.
You better have it, because otherwise it's going to be painful.
Yeah.
If you're still on slow...
Windows 10 on 4 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, it's going to be slow anyway.
Will it work in my dial-up?
Yes. Yeah, Microsoft will gladly sell you an instance to run on your dial-up. Yep. You know that. You can run it over your phone if you have unlimited data, or you don't mind paying for metric bucket loads of...
Yeah, and you've got the patience of a saint.
Yeah, no kidding. Look, we've been saying this forever. Microsoft doesn't really care about the desktop anymore. If you look at their financials, you will discover that they make 90% of their money out in the cloud, selling Azure instances, selling Microsoft Office 365 instances, all its Teams, Microsoft Teams, databases, everything else. It's all up there. And so Microsoft Windows has become an almost insignificant portion of their income. So they're looking to make that as easy for them as possible. And the easiest way for them is if you run it on the cloud, where they can always update to whatever they want. They can always make sure that it runs perfectly on the whatever instance they're running it on. Yeah. And you don't have to ever worry about that ever again.
So that, and that's also may cut down on their Windows revenue for selling Windows on a PC.
But no, because if they're making $25 to $50 at a minimum,
yeah,
and they're, you know, the estimate has always been it's $12 to $15 for a company to buy an instance of a license for Windows,
yeah,
for a PC. So if they double that income, they win all the way around.
So we may see a change in how PCs are sold, with just some sort of a thing to get you on the internet to get to that virtual desktop.
Yeah, basically we could buy
a dumb terminal.
Dumb terminals, essentially, yeah. Wise makes a laptop that is just a terminal emulator. You open it up and it's a terminal emulator, and you put in, you know, go to this address, and bang, you're in. You could run whatever you want on that.
VT52, or do we get the whole VT100?
You get the VT100, 101, 102, whatever it takes.
Well, we do have somebody just texted in on this subject. It's Jerry in Rochester asks, isn't cloud PC the same as running on a mainframe? The age of the impersonal computer is coming back?
Yes, it's exactly right. Everything old is new again, and it all circles back around the circle of life. We used to run everything on the mainframe, and we had dumb terminals on our desks. That's the way it's going to be again in the Microsoft world. If you want to run a Microsoft operating system, you'll have a dumb device in your hands of whatever shape that is, and you will run strictly in the cloud. Which means that your data plan suddenly becomes a whole lot more important. For those of you who are on unlimited phone plan, God bless you. Those of you who pay by the gig, or those of you who have data caps on your ISP, you're going to find that you run out of those, that you run up against that data cap pretty quickly once you're doing everything in the cloud. It's going to change a lot of models, a lot of places. But yes, Jerry, it is exactly what you're saying. We are back to the days of running things off the mainframe. Now, as a one-time system administrator, I applaud that. It's a whole lot easier to maintain instances mm-hmm. on the server and get them right and then deploy them to people than it is to run around to 200 desktops.
Eliminates viruses, spyware.
Everything. And it makes updating ridiculously easy, and it makes testing new versions ridiculously easy. I get all of that. From Microsoft's point of view, it is absolutely the right idea. I believe there are a number of you iconoclastic so-and-sos who are going to be a little bit upset at the idea of paying Microsoft every year for the privilege of running their operating system at a slower pace than you used to, and spending more to do it, and having to pay for data. And this is also going to strain many of the current ISP networks.
Mm-hmm.
You may see some of the networks that currently don't have data caps begin to institute data caps, because those networks are going to be used a heck of a lot more than they were before. So it's going to change the entire landscape. Or you can buy a Chromebook or a Mac or Linux. And avoid
all of
that.
Well, that's why Chromebooks are still taking over like crazy. I mean, look at your school systems. Most of the school systems have all gone to Chromebooks.
Well, and that's why, as I said in the thing here, I guarantee you that Microsoft is looking at making Chromebooks with desktop a first-class citizen. Because there are so many of them out there that they're getting no money from right now.
Mm-hmm.
That makes them angry. So if I can run an instance of Microsoft Windows on a Chromebook just by running a desktop emulator, some sort of desktop program, remote desktop, Microsoft wins. They get money from me that they never would have gotten.
But they're going to still have a lot of problems with that, in that there are so many applications that don't rely on Windows. They've got their own ways of doing things as far as kids, writing their homework and everything else that's all free. And it's in the system where they don't already have to worry about getting viruses, spyware, malware. And if they want to do an update, they can do it.
Yeah, but see, they don't. Life has changed over the last 20 years. Microsoft doesn't care about home desktops anymore.
Right, they don't.
They simply don't care.
But
what they care about businesses. And if they can, if they make my life as a system administrator easier,
mm-hmm.
then I'm going to buy into that. And also, once they've got my business running, they can sell me Teams. They can sell me all of the other business applications that they run, that all run in the cloud and all will have hooks into the new cloud desktop.
But see, they still got to catch up, though, to Chrome, is what I'm saying, though. Chrome is already farther ahead.
No, not in business apps. When it comes to, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, they I'm talking about the schools.
They don't care. They will
they
care
should.
To a certain point for the schools. Yes, they will care that schools are not running Office. They absolutely care about that.
So they'll try to move them to Office in the cloud.
They'll move them to Office in the cloud. And to do that, you'll want to run Windows in the cloud.
Yep.
So they'll get their $50 or $100 or $200 per student, except that I don't see schools paying that, frankly. But that's your choice, I guess. But there's just no way that they can compete any longer against Chromebooks. And so they're looking to co-opt that by allowing you to run Windows over a Chromebook. And it is specifically Chromebooks they're aiming for. They'd love to get Macs and they'd love to get Linux.
Well, that may be necessary on the Apple Silicon Macs that can't run x86 anymore.
Right, right. But they'll be able to get that and they'll be happy to get that. But what they're really looking at are the hundreds of millions of Chromebooks that have been sold into schools.
That's actually a story going around. When Apple announced the new machines, they had a statistic that the new MacBook Air is faster than 98% of the laptops that are out there. And people are digging into the asterisks to see how they actually tested this. It's impossible.
Right.
There's an awful lot of pretty low-end Chromebooks out there.
Yeah, there are.
So, okay, maybe.
Yeah.
So that's probably 90% of the 98%.
Yep, that's exactly right. So who knows where that's all going to lead? But I'm telling you right now, we've said it before. We'll say it again. Microsoft doesn't care about the desktop.
Nope.
And doesn't really want to be running it locally.
Well, we've said that also because you can go into most stores now. And you don't see the big boxes anymore. It's all either laptops or tablets. I don't care what store you go into, BJ's, Walmart,
and if they
Target,
do,
any of them.
And what I'm really seeing is a lot of those little micro desktops.
Yeah, if they do have a tower, it's a NUC.
It's not a tower.
Right, it's a micro tower. Not even a mini tower.
It's a Mac Mini.
It's a Mac Mini, yeah.
Yeah, or an all-in-one.
Which is a laptop without a screen on it.
Right.
Or they'll do the all-in-ones.
Yeah.
Right. You know, where it's just a screen and everything else is into it.
Right. You're paying for a screen and they tack the computer on the back of it.
Yep. And because...
that's a laptop and a stand.
Yeah, exactly. Because everybody wants to be portable.
Right.
You know, they want to move around their house and everything else because of, you know, the Wi-Fi in it is...
And Microsoft will be saying, hey, you can run Windows on your tablet, on your iPad.
We had a customer a couple weeks ago.
I don't know why you would.
Yeah,
but
really.
You could. Sure.
We had a customer a couple weeks ago want to replace their 12-year-old desktop.
Right.
And so, well, you bought a laptop last year. Let's just get a screen for that desk, and then you can put your laptop on it. No, I want a desktop. Well, you've got a laptop, and you've got an iPad, and your wife has an iPad, and no, I want a desktop. Okay.
Okay, at some point, take my money. Stop saying no.
Yeah, really. I mean,
my daughter has a laptop, and I bought her an external screen for her work, because she works remotely.
And now it's a desktop.
So now she's got two screens.
That's portable, yeah.
Right. Yeah. She can unhook the one and wander around with it, and or tablet or phone or whatever she wants to do. And but when she's at her desk, she's got two screens, the laptop screen and the giant desktop screen. And she's happy. You don't need more than that. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks to every single one of you who called or texted in. It is you people who make this show what it is. Like I said, tomorrow night at 9 p.m., we will be doing video chat, and Steve is right. I got to change the URL. Right now it's soundbites.org/Jitsi, J-I-T-S-I. And if you join in at 9 o'clock, we'll be there answering your computer questions and just chit-chatting in general. So if you've got a question, ask it. Don't wait to be asked to ask it. But other than that, we will be, and of course I'll be doing that Wednesday night for people who are members of Ask Nick. And we will see you next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.